This podcast is brought to you by On Track Studio.
Welcome back to Mind Your Head. This week, joining me in the studio is Zoe Brown. Zoe shows extreme vulnerability in this episode, talking about her most recent struggle with motherhood and how it has led to postpartum depression, an illness around 1 in 7 mothers will experience. This chat has had a huge impact on me as it opened my eyes to something I think we all need to start talking about. This episode isn't just for new parents, but for everyone, because chances are someone you love will suffer from postpartum depression. I can't thank Zoe enough for sharing her story. Zoe, welcome to Mindshed. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
I really appreciate you coming on and having a chat to me about something that is very personal to you and something that you're extremely passionate about, and that's postpartum depression. Do you think it's something that isn't spoken about enough?
Yeah, for sure. I don't think I knew much about postpartum depression or anxiety at all, including after my first. It wasn't till my second that I kind of got introduced to it, I guess.
Mm. Yeah. Early parenthood is often portrayed as something as really fulfilling and wonderful times in our lives, and which that was the experience for your first child, but you had a completely different experience for your second child. And can you tell me a little bit about that time in your life?
I think you have like a preconceived idea of motherhood and parenting and how you're going to go into it, and it majority of the time doesn't work out the same way that you think it's going to. So for Georgie, my first, I had all of the normal issues that everyone talks about, the sleep and the, you know, new identity and working yourself out. But with Alvy, it was a little bit different. Like, I felt like I was like, cool, I'm, you know, experienced parent, second child, I know what I'm doing. And it wasn't till about, I'd say, 8 weeks after he was born, I was going for a walk. I dropped Georgie off to daycare and I was going for a walk with Alvy, and I started to feel like a bit of pressure in my chest. Like, I was a bit nervous and I was like, oh, okay. And I was walking, I'd walked from my mum's house. So we were walking along the path, and the further I got away from my mum, the further I started to feel a bit like unsafe, which was weird because I was safe. I was, no one else was there. Alvy was in the pram, he was asleep. It was just a normal walk, but it didn't feel right. So I went back and I was like, okay, that was weird. And then it kind of started to happen more regularly. Like, the more I would walk, the further I would get away from people in general, the more stressed out I would get.
Anxiety you'd feel.
But at the time I didn't know what anxiety was or anything. So I was just put it down to the fact that I was tired. From there, I think it was depression to begin with. So I started getting really depressed. I started to struggle to find joy in anything I was doing. Like, I was feeling like, you know, my baby's crawling for the first time, and even though I loved him, I just didn't really seem to care. Or, he'd smile at people and I was like, oh, that's so cute. And then I'd go sit back down and I'd feel like empty on the inside. So I went to my doctor and he was like, you know, sounds like postpartum depression, you should take some medication. And I was like, no, I won't do that. I'll exercise and I'll cut out sugar and I'll meditate and I'll
go holistic.
I bought a journal.
Yeah. Did you?
Which is kind of horrifying to read now. So I started doing all of that kind of stuff, but I think it was just kind of spiraling. So I went back again and I would cry, and then I decided to try the antidepressants. And they do say the first 6 weeks of taking them is the hardest, which is definitely what happened. So I was having a few like anxiety attacks here and there. You know, I'd pull over on the side of the road and hyperventilate and calm myself down, and then I'd keep driving and I was like, okay, that was weird. But it wasn't until I started taking the antidepressants that I had like the worst panic attack. And I feel like I know the difference between like a panic attack and an anxiety attack now. And so I was laying in bed and I was going to have a nap while Alvy was sleeping, and I kind of woke up. The room was spinning. I felt like someone was like standing on my chest. My fingers were frozen, so like I couldn't move them at all. I was like trying, like kind of running around the room, not really knowing how to bring myself back to reality, I guess. And I ran out actually into the middle of the road and tried to wave someone down because I thought I was having like a heart attack or something. Yeah. I was calling everyone in my phone, trying to get someone to come over because I had this idea that if someone was there, it wouldn't be happening. And then from that big one, I was like in a state of panic for like 48 hours. Like, I couldn't calm down. My heart was beating. Yeah. Couldn't sleep. I couldn't I would just cry because I was like, what is happening to me? Yeah, it was crazy.
So what do you think contributed to, say, comparing your first child to your second, do you think?
I don't know, really. I think it's definitely an expectation thing. Like, because, like I said, I felt like I was an experienced parent and I had done this before. So here comes my second baby and I'm like, I know what I'm doing. But I also think sometimes you just get unlucky. Like, sometimes I think you've taken on too much and you're trying to do too much. Like, you know, I've got a newborn and I'm dropping my daughter off to daycare and then I'm getting out there to make sure I go for a walk and I'm making sure I see my friends, because that's what you're supposed to do when you have babies, is hang out with all of your mum friends and whatever. So I don't know if it was expectation or what. There's probably a few things I could put it down to, but
yeah. And especially, I think it's what I've chatted to even my mum, who experienced that same thing, and some friends who are mothers that experienced the same thing. It's very situational. I think you had just moved to a new house and it was very isolated, wasn't it?
Yeah, we had no neighbours and like you'd look out the window and it was a beautiful view, but there was not a single soul in sight, like everywhere you looked. So I think I really find comfort in people. Like, I'm a people person in general. So not having anyone else around, and even though it was like only a 15-minute drive for someone to come, when you're having a panic attack, that feels like an eternity.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And what are some things that you think made it worse? I know, like, social media is probably not the best thing to use at the...
Yeah, it's hard to say. I think, like, I spent the next 9 months not being able to be by myself after that first, like, initial really bad panic attack. I had, like, a roster of people that would come and work from my house. Just my friends would come and just sit there. And, like, I was probably not a good time to be around. Like, I was very much in my head. I felt like I couldn't control my own thoughts. Like, I'd lost control of my brain I don't know if that's a good explanation, but, and then I would just cry because I felt so horrible and I felt so guilty and I felt like a burden. And it was just this cycle that I was in. And, I'd always try something new. Like, I would be like, all right, let's try and meditate. And then, you know, I'd meditate and then I'd have a panic attack and then I'd cry because it's brought me back to the start, like nothing would work.
Yeah.
So I think I was essentially my own worst enemy, maybe.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think you're so desperate to try and fix it that you don't give yourself the time to fix it in a way. Yeah.
What were some of the fears you had during that time?
I remember saying to Drew, like, I said, I will never be able to drive my car again by myself, like, ever.
Really?
Yeah. I will never be able to look after the kids by myself ever again. Like, this is me now. This is – I'm just at home, stressed and panicked about nothing.
That was going to be your reality.
And I even said it to when I started seeing a psychologist. Like, I used to do a Zoom call because, like, there was no way that I was going to drive there. And I said to her the same thing and she's like, you will. And she would always kind of, like, I think that's what you can say to people, like, it'll pass, you know, you will come out the other side, you just need to take some time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I spoke to Drew and he I remember I went around to your house and I said, has this experience put you off having any more kids?
Yeah.
And Drew mentioned something about the childbirth experience itself and labour.
Yeah, it was not fun.
Was it not fun?
Oh, Georgie's was quite traumatic, which I think...
Georgie's your first?
Yeah, Georgie being my first. Alvy was my second.
Yeah.
Georgie's was... It was a long labour. I had 3 epidurals and all of them failed. So I had no pain relief, but, like, hospital policies that you have to lay flat on your back if you've had an epidural, regardless of whether it worked or not. So I'm, like, laying on my back, feeling all the pain and not being able to do anything about it. So I was like, you know, what's wrong with me? Why can I not have any pain, you know, any medication or anything to help me? So it was quite traumatic. Whereas Alvy, we did hypnobirthing and it was a lot better.
What's that?
It's like where you learn to, like, breathe through contractions and it's like a form of meditation.
And that worked? That helped?
Yeah, yeah, I was like silent for 8 hours. But I didn't say a word. Except for when someone would talk to me and I'd be like, shut up! And then I'd go back to my zen.
Real zen.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, and it's very, even the rigorous, I guess, routine of being a mother. So many aspects of it. Like, I spoke to some friends about it and, you know, there's a reason why sleep deprivation is a form of torture. And I think there's so many, like, different aspects that go into it. Like, your whole life I feel completely changes, and
yeah,
you can go days without sleep. You forget to shower, you forget to eat.
Yeah.
Is that what it was like for you?
Yeah, for sure. And I guess with two as well, like even less sleep, because Georgie was only two when I had Alvy. So, yeah, and you just like feel, because you're tired, like everything's worse when you're tired. You're angrier when you're tired. You're more emotional when you're tired. You're more sensitive. Like if someone didn't want to hang out with me, I'd be like, oh, they hate me. Mm. Instead of like they're just busy. Mm. So like, and you just get so angry. Like if you're trying to put someone to sleep and they don't go to sleep and you're like, I want to go to sleep.
Yeah.
Why do you not want to go to sleep? It's just, it's hard. The emotions are crazy and the hormones are crazy and you definitely lose yourself a lot. And I did with Georgie, and I went and spoke to someone and it kind of levered me out a little bit. And then I had Alvy, and then it kind of
skyrocketed a little bit.
Yeah.
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 So you didn't leave the house for 9 months, did you say? Yeah.
No, I didn't. So like even if we would go, like if this is, and this is where I feel like I was a massive burden to everyone, and everyone, you know, repeatedly tells me that I'm not, and that I would do the same for them. But like, I couldn't even go, like Drew couldn't even go to the grocery store. Like we would all go as a family of four. And then like, if he were to park out the front and he would go into the shops, my heart would start beating. I'd start to get dizzy. Like it would come on, and I became like scared of the panic attack.
Yeah.
And what started the panic attack was being by myself.
And what feared you about being by yourself?
Because you just feel like you're not in control. So, like, you can't breathe and you can't move. Yeah. And I don't know, it just seemed to stop when people were with me, because I had in the back of my mind that they'll be able to help me, they'll be able to look after the kids.
Oh, okay.
I didn't have any...
So, you're by yourself, you were worried that something would happen to you.
Yeah, to the kids.
No one look after the kids.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's just, I don't know, like for anyone that's had a panic attack before, like it's a terrifying experience. It's like an intense fear inside your body that it's not kind of come from anything. Like you haven't been scared, or you haven't been in a car accident, or it's just this random, all of a sudden it starts like, I get shivers up the back of my spine, and then the fear comes on in my chest, and it's like you're terrified. Oh, wow. It's hard to explain, but it's just a terrifying thing to happen. And I think from that I developed a panic disorder. I was just so not in control of my mind that I didn't even know how I was going to think each day. So each day I'd wake up and be like, all right, like prep myself for which way it was going to go. Like, was I going to be sad and cry all day, or was I going to be terrified all day? They were the only two options.
And that was your life for...
For a really long time. Yeah. 9 months. And when I was in it, like, it went really slowly.
I bet.
Especially because I didn't have a lot of hope coming out of it. Like, I definitely thought that was me now.
Yeah.
So I was pretty close to checking myself into a few places to see if that would help. But then the thought of being away from my kids being so little, I couldn't do it.
I've done a little bit of reading, and for your situation, did you still feel like a connection with Alvy?
I feel like I get lucky because, like, I've obviously done a lot of research online in my days of sitting at home. And, like, a lot of people feel resentment towards their kids. Like, they blame their kids for the way that they feel, because essentially that's what happened to start it. But I think I got lucky in the sense that I didn't really have any resentment towards them. I don't know why. I just didn't. Probably because they're so cute. I don't know.
They are. How did that whole 9 months, I guess, impact you and Drew's relationship?
I mean, it was definitely tough, but I think Drew didn't shoulder it all. Like, my mum was very much there for me, and his mum was very much there for me. So, you know, it definitely would have been hard for him. Like, you know, he's also running a construction company, and then he's got two new kids as well, and he's kind of helping with that as well. And then he's also being at home, and he can't go to the shops by himself, and he can't go and surf in the morning because he's worried of how I'm going to react. And, you know, because it was dark for a little while. Like, I definitely said that I didn't want to continue this life.
Yeah.
Like, the thought of, or if anyone mentioned suicide, or if it was on a movie or whatever, I would get this pit in my stomach. And it's not because I thought that I was going to commit suicide, but I didn't trust my mind of where to take me.
Really?
Yeah. So I, at the time, I was like, no, I would never take my life. Yeah. I would never, you know, be away from my kids or my husband or my friends. But it's weird, like the suicide word scared the shit out of me.
Yeah. You felt a little bit fragile and like that mental state, like.
Yeah, fragile. And yeah, I didn't know, like, you know, what if one day my brain wakes up and is like, you're done.
Yeah. So you, like, you didn't feel in control of your brain and your thoughts and your emotions?
No, not at all. Yeah, no idea. Yeah. I had no idea what they were going to do.
Yeah.
They were really negative. Like, I couldn't seem to get a positive spin on anything.
Mm.
Even though, you know, that's what Drew and my mum and my friends were desperately trying to put across, like spin it to a positive. But I would just shut it down and be like, nah, that's...
You said you had a lot of support from your mum and Drew's mum and, mm-hmm. and Drew. Did you feel a little bit disconnected from some of your friends? Did some of your friends have kids at the time?
Yeah, I mean, with Georgie, no. Like, we were definitely kind of the start of our friends having kids, and still a lot of them don't. There's definitely people that you think that are going to be there that aren't. But I don't think it's because they don't want to be. I just think it's because they don't understand. They don't understand what I was going through. I didn't really tell a lot of people. You know, I would just say, yeah, I'm struggling a bit. It's all good. So, like, I didn't really allow a lot of people to be there for me. It was just a few close friends that actually did have kids. So they could bring their kids around to play with my kids, and I could just sit in, like, my little sadness bubble. So, you definitely lose a few friends through parenthood, but you definitely find out who your real ones are as well. So.
Yeah, 100%. Because when I've done a little bit of research for your podcast, I've chatted to a few people, and some of my best friends have had kids. And I was chatting to them about their experience with it. It's very similar to yours. And she said that she felt very isolated and alone, and even people just coming around to hold the baby and just so she could have a shower or go have a quick nap. And she'd never meant for this to be feeling bad, but I really felt bad that I felt like I wasn't there.
Yeah.
And she never meant that to make me feel bad, but after I got off the phone, like, they're my best friends and I don't have kids. So I just, in my head, I thought, all right, they just had a baby. I'll give them some space. I'll give them some time. Like, they don't want me around.
Yeah.
But in fact, they needed someone around, and I remember getting off the phone going, fuck, I feel terrible.
Yeah.
Because I love these people.
Yeah.
And I just felt like I wasn't there for them.
Yeah. And yeah, I think, like, you don't really know at what point to ask for help. Like, sometimes it's easier. Like, even with my second baby, my friends that had kids, you know, they brought round cooked meals and they came and held the baby while we had a shower, or they'd tidy up the lounge room before they left. Like, little things like that that you understand, but you don't know, and you can't blame people for not knowing, and they wouldn't hold any resentment towards you.
Yeah.
But it still sucks to hear that they were struggling and you didn't know.
And I didn't know, and I didn't do anything about it. And I just, because I don't have kids of my own, I just never thought about that. I thought that would just be good on there, you know, that they've got it sorted.
Yeah, because I feel like before I had, like, a pretty big, not an ego, but I was really confident. Like, I feel like if you had met me through high school, it would be really different. I was really confident, strong. I knew everything I wanted to say. I didn't show any emotion, which is my downfall. And then now, like, I cry all the time. But it's different. It was hard, though. It was hard to admit to quite a few people that I needed help. And Drew, it wasn't hard. It was easy. But, yeah, some of my friends were like, what do you mean? Like, you're all right.
Yeah.
And I was like, nope, not all right. Not all right. Need you to come over.
Do you think that's a common trait in mothers asking for help?
Yeah, because it seems like it would be a failure because, you know, women are born to be mothers, you know, like, a lot of people look at it that way. And also you have this preconceived idea of how you're going to parent. So when it comes down to it and you're like, yeah, I'm still going to go, you know, up Double Island camping and I'm still going to go out for dinner.
Yeah.
And then you can't go out for dinner anymore. You feel like you failed.
Yeah.
And it is hard because everyone else is going out for dinner. But everyone will have their turn and it'll, it passes. Like, we can go out for dinner now.
Yeah.
And my kids are 2 and 4. I mean, sometimes it's not the most enjoyable experience, but we can still do it. Whereas before we couldn't do it. So, it was hard. It was hard to, because I was so closed off emotionally and I didn't really know what my emotions were, which is what my psychologist helped me with. I understand way more why I'm feeling the way that I'm feeling and to express it. and I'm better at it now. Mm. Yeah.
Lovely. It's often like said that being a parent's one of the hardest and one of the best things you'll ever do.
Yeah.
And what makes me, I wonder, like, how hard is too hard? And does, I guess, does the line get blurry acknowledging if it's too hard or not?
Yeah. I think, like, obviously social media, everyone puts up just cute photos of their kids and that's it. You know, that's all that you see. So you see, oh, yeah, they're parenting, they're loving their life. I think with parenting, all the hard parts pass. You know, like, it's like this. Like, you, I feel like now, second time around, like, and I've got a four-year-old and a two-year-old, I know that even if it sucks right now and he won't sleep or he's hitting everyone or whatever, it'll pass. Mm. It'll go. So, yeah. I mean, it is a really, really hard job, but it has so many positives. Like, you see the world differently. Yeah. And, like, things are more fun. Like, Christmas is better.
The best.
Yeah.
I don't even celebrate Christmas now. But I can't wait to have kids and then we can actually do it.
Yeah. And then everyone does it too early where you take your baby to see Santa and they cry and you're just trying to get into that Christmas spirit and the baby doesn't know what Christmas is yet.
Yeah.
You do everything too early, but it's, it's good. It's fun.
How did being diagnosed with ADHD change?
Funnily, my psychologist told me that a lot of females are diagnosed with ADHD after they have kids because the ADHD kind of diagnosis is a lot more focused at young boys, like kids. So girls aren't looked at as much, supposedly. ADHD, there's like three types and I'm impulsive ADHD, so for anyone that knows us, like, we've moved 7 times in 4 years. I've had like 300 jobs. I'm always kind of doing the next thing. Once I finish something, I move on to another thing. It's not going to be the case with kids. It actually helped me a lot. I didn't believe it for a little while because I was like, nah, I'm not a hyperactive person. I'm not running the walls or whatever. Yeah, yeah. My psychologist was like pretty sure and she was like, let's go do the testing and all that kind of stuff because you've got to get tested by a few different professionals before you can get prescribed any medication.
Yeah.
And again, I was very hesitant to take the medication because I had finally, after like a year and a half, come off antidepressants and I was pumped because I didn't want to be on them. And then trying the ADHD, it's definitely not the same thing, but it calms my mind like I've never felt before. Like, I can listen to you, your full sentence, without something else talking in my head.
Oh, wow.
If that's an explanation of it.
I think I might have ADD.
Well, a lot of people say the same thing. I think ADHD is like a combination of everyone's traits, but you have all of them. And yeah, so it's put a lot into perspective about my anxiety because a lot of people, like, when you're anxious, they're like, just calm your mind. And like, that was physically impossible for me to do. Mm. So So when I worked out that I could clear my mind by taking medication, it was like, it was a game changer.
And looking back on it, it kind of makes sense that you like change, you like moving around.
Yeah.
You had that 9 months where you couldn't leave the house.
Yeah, it was, and it was like the opposite of my personality.
The opposite, exactly.
Yeah. Like, even Drew and I, pre-kids, like, we were very together but individual. Like, we had our own interests and hobbies and we did our own thing, and I loved when Drew went away and I had the weekend to myself and I could just do whatever and watch my reality TV or whatever, and I just loved it. So I had this, like, I just hated myself for it as well because I was like, just be by yourself. You love it. Like, why are you doing this?
Why has everything changed so much?
Yeah.
It's not you.
Yeah. So, like, not only did I feel like a burden to everyone else, I was just, like, so frustrated with myself too. Mm. And, like, you know, I would try and then it would revert back and then I would be – it was just like a spiral.
Vicious cycle.
A vicious cycle.
So how long did you see a psychologist for?
I still see her.
Oh, you still see her?
Yep. I feel like she's one of my besties.
Yeah, I bet. She would know you quite well.
Yeah, she knows everything about me. She knows, like, what I'm doing to avoid conversations and things like that.
And you've had her since the start, have you?
Yeah, so I actually saw her after I had Georgie when I was like, well, lost what I want to do. And I went and saw her and I just connected with her.
Mm-hmm.
After Albie, I went back to her and she had a long wait list, but then I've just jumped on that wait list and I've never left.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So what are some of the things that she's told you, or maybe little tips that she's given you to...
She talks, like, without going too deep into it, like, she really focuses on, like, your core beliefs, which are usually quite negative for a lot of people. So there's like the way she does it is she'll ask you a question and then she'll be like, so what? And then you'll be like, okay, well, if that happens, so what? Then this. And then you kind of keep going until you get to the end. So like my core belief is that I'm not good enough. So comes into everything that I do.
Yeah.
So the way I react to situations is usually because I think that I'm not good enough, or maybe like, I guess the postpartum stuff could have been that I thought I wasn't good enough, you know? So finding out that core belief has helped me, because then like I'm actively trying to change that now.
Mm. Yeah. So, it's like having that, the standards are too high for yourself.
Yeah.
And I can imagine there'll be so many thoughts. Like I think about this, I don't have kids, but I think about this now as like, when I see, when I go to my friend's place and their baby is crying, and in my head I'm like, is they hungry? Is he sleeping? Like, is the baby okay? Is it a happy cry? Is it a sad cry? Like, do they need attention? Like, so many thoughts run through my head.
Yeah.
And it's not even my baby.
No.
Is that the same?
I feel like parenting is quite natural. Like, you think you're not going to know, but you do.
Yeah.
You work it out. Like, Drew and I have always talked about having like a tick list on the back of the door when you're really tired and you go in, the baby's crying. You're like, all right, have I like checked this? Have I fed them? I like tick it off. Yeah. We never did it, but like you should, because you do know, you just get tired and then you forget. But I feel like you go into parenting, we're like, how am I supposed to raise a small human? And you just do. It's actually quite easy once you're doing it.
You can say that now.
I can say it now,
So how are you feeling now is with all the help you received? And
I feel I still definitely wouldn't say I'm out of the bad mental health that I had. I'm definitely a lot better. A lot of things helped me, the main being time. Going back to work was massive for me. A lot of people feel guilty to do that, but it's been a blessing for me, like to go out and feel productive and have that adult interaction and, you know, like that really helped. I still really struggle to be by myself. Like Drew's going away for 4 nights and I'm having like a roster of people still stay with me. Yeah, because like being by myself is really triggering for me.
Still not comfortable just yet.
Even though we've moved from where we were to a place and the neighbours are lovely and I feel a lot safer.
Not so isolated. Yeah,
not so isolated, but still a journey coming back out.
Did you go to any mothers groups or anything like that?
Yeah, so not with Alvi. With Georgie, I went to a mothers group and it is the best thing I ever did.
Yeah,
because they do, I think it's changed since COVID, but they do like a 6-week program where they teach you about like breastfeeding or bottle feeding and teething and sleep and whatever. And they put everyone in there with the same age kids. And because I feel like a lot of the time your friends have kids and you still feel like you're going to hang out now that they've had kids, but different ages are different levels, you know, when you've got a baby, you can sit on Alex Hill and have a beer and they're fine. Whereas like my kids will jump off the cliff. So like it's hard to, you know, but the parenting, having kids the same age is been a life changer, and they're two of my best friends now. So,
oh, are they?
Yeah.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. So we've all got one of them's had another one who's the same age as Alvi too. So, it's worth it. It's so worth going, even if you don't think you need it or you think you've got your friends. I still feel like it's beneficial. To meet people going through the same stage of life as you.
Yeah, and you can almost feel like you're not alone. Like some of the fears or some of the things you're going through, you feel like it's just you, and then you join a mother's group and you're like, oh, we can all bond over this same thing.
Yeah. And it's really lonely. It is really lonely. And even when you have friends, it's still really lonely. But, it passes. Gets better.
Yeah. How are your kids now, though?
They're good.
Are they?
Yeah, really good. Yeah. Georgie's starting school next year.
Yeah, nice.
It feels weird to talk about this whole process and then now I've got a kid starting school. It's been a journey.
Is your experience something that you would like to talk to your kids about one day?
Yeah, Georgie's already aware.
Really?
Yeah, because, I mean, she was there through the whole thing. Like, she'd watch me, like, this is sad, but, like, I would sit in the kitchen floor and I'd cry and they would sit either side of me. Yeah, I know. But I feel like it's, like, I've been discussed this with Drew before, like if we have an argument, it's really good to have that argument in front of your kids, obviously being respectful, and then make up after the argument so the kids can see that it's fine to argue with people, but you have that resolution in the end.
Yeah.
And so I'm hoping that with the Georgie watching me kind of go through all of this, because she was old enough to realize what was happening, that she can see now that I'm happy.
Yeah.
And that I'm kind of like on the other side. So, I mean, hopefully it helps her. Yeah.
Well, I think it will. I think it's showing that it's okay to not be okay.
Yeah.
And okay to ask for help.
Yeah.
And I think now, well, my generation, it just wasn't okay.
No.
Like if something was up, you'd just bottle it down.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't tell anyone.
No.
You'd try and knuckle on.
Yep.
And that's no way to go about it. And I think that what you're doing so early with your kids is showing them that, yeah, we have a fight. It's okay to have an argument or disagreement.
Yeah.
But it's also imperative that you make up at the end of it.
Yeah.
You may not agree on things, but that's the relationship, I think.
Yeah.
You're not always going to agree on things, but there's always love and respect there.
Yeah. And respect for that. Yeah. Respect for the other person. And, we always make sure they see, not so much Albie, but he needs a whole nother should be shown what to do. But we see that, yeah, Georgie can see that we make up at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you had a proper chat to your kids about?
No, but
it's good. They're still quite young, aren't they?
They're still quite young. Yeah, Georgie's 4, so she's turning 5 next year. Yeah. So, it's funny because sometimes we'll go out and like, or Drew and the kids will walk out of the bedroom, and Georgie will look back and be like, "You okay, Mum?" And walk out, and I was like, oh, she's emotionally intelligent. It's working.
She knows me too well.
Yeah, she knows me too well. She knows I might cry as soon as she leaves. But she knows that I'll be okay after. Yeah.
She'll say, "I'll be back soon, Mum."
Yeah, no, she does. She says
does
that.
She?
Yeah, she'll be back soon. Are you okay by yourself? Yeah. Sometimes I'm like, oh, is this
that.
A good thing? But I think it is.
She's aware. She cares, and she's aware. And like, I think at a young age, she shows empathy towards you, and I think she's considerate. Like,
and I think like our parents were so focused on us not seeing them cry or all that kind of stuff, and her seeing it like 4 years ago, I would have been like, that doesn't make you look like a strong parent. But now my mindset's changed, where it's like, it does make me look like a strong parent because I can show emotion, and then I can regroup myself, work out how to make myself feel better, and actively work towards that. And I think that's important, and the old narrative is kind of gone now, I think, for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
As it should, though, yeah. What advice would you give someone, a woman going through postpartum depression or might be pregnant?
Yeah, because you can get
prenatal
depression.
Yeah,
which I feel like a lot of people get depressed just before their due date because you're just like over it and you're waiting to get the baby out, and it can still take another 2 weeks. Or, I mean, for me, I guess I'll just talk about postpartum depression anxiety. One of the worst things I could have done that I did every day was search social media for stories similar to mine, which is like one of the reasons why I wanted to do this with you, because I feel like you need to find someone you can relate to. And when you can't find anyone, you just feel like you're the biggest fuck up because no one else is as bad as you. Mm. Or you read something and it's like, yeah, 6 years in, I'm still struggling. And you're like, great, this is 6 years. It's never good to read other people's stories when it's not coming from a professional or it's not a positive story. And a lot of people like to be more negative than positive. Mm. And I feel like everyone should know that it will pass, and even if you get really, really low, you'll come back up again. And it could be the simple fact of listening to a podcast like yours, or it could be meeting someone at the mother's group that's like, yeah, that's me too, or just little things like that. You'll come back out the other side.
Yeah.
But you just gotta wait.
Try not to compare yourself to people online. I mean,
yeah,
it's like that old thing when you Dr. Google, when you've got like a sore throat and you Google it, and it's like they say something horrific.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with children.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, everyone Googles their children's symptoms as well, which you shouldn't have to, but I still do it. So try not to compare yourself, and keep people around you that like are safe and that you can trust, and you know that that they'll be there for you.
Yeah.
In the long run, because they're worth their weight in gold.
It's good to compare sometimes when you're in a difficult situation and say there's someone always worse off than you.
Yeah.
But then that's also, comparing is also bad because some you think someone's more worse off than you.
Mm.
You don't take your own...
You're not validating your feelings.
Your feelings.
Yeah.
And you're pushing that to the side and then it's just going to create and make things worse for itself.
Yeah. Like you think, okay, well, this person has had this horrible, like they've lost all of their family in a fire and you're sad because you've had two healthy kids. Like,
yeah.
And you're like, oh, like how is that? Like you're comparing yourself to someone else and it's just not beneficial for anyone involved.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing I was going to say is I feel like there's no right way to act in anxiety or depression. Like you feel like some people feel like you should be at home in bed, not being able to move when they're outside functioning adults, but they still feel the same amount of like darkness as that person laying down. So there's like no right way to feel anxious or to feel depressed or to struggle. Everyone's different.
Yeah.
That
does make it harder to spot though and recognize, doesn't it? Because for myself, I was going through some pretty dark times, but yeah. I was still on the outside looking in. I was still going to work. I was still playing footy or exercising and maybe being social.
Yeah.
But internally, it was the complete opposite.
Yeah. There's an organization that I did call once called Panda, and it's for, I think it's postpartum anxiety and depression, and that's their sole focus, and they speak to anyone, like expecting mums, mums that want to have kids but are struggling or can't, postpartum, during pregnancy, and they're a really good organization. And I did, yeah, call them once and it was a good conversation.
24/7 hotline, is it?
I think so, yeah. I think you can call them all the time, yeah. And there's always people waiting to talk to you if you don't feel like you can talk to anyone else.
And that has huge help for you, does it?
Yeah, I think just having someone else understand what I was talking about instead of trying to every time you'd speak to someone new, you'd start from the start and explain the whole reason why you're feeling this way, even though you weren't really sure yourself. Whereas this person was just like, I understand.
She got it.
That's horrible.
Yeah. That's great. You had a good experience. We'll put that down in the show notes down below. If one of the listeners knows someone who's just given birth or suspects they might be suffering from postpartum depression, what are some of the things their friends can do to support them? This is something that I wish I knew.
Yeah.
Before some of my friends had kids.
Yeah. It's hard because you can do too much, I think, sometimes and make them feel worse. Like I would get asked, you know, how are you doing now? And I wouldn't be doing great. So it would be a reminder for me that I wasn't doing good, which, you know, again, everyone's just got your best interest and they're trying to help you, but sometimes it can go the other way. So I think, I really am grateful for my friends for just listening to me. Like they just listen to me cry and listen to me talk about, you know, horrible. Like I started, what actually helped me was I started voicing the real negative stuff in my brain, which was like quite confronting to some people because they're like, oh my God, like that's really bad. Like you're not okay. Mm. But putting it out there for someone else to hear and then for their reaction sometimes helped because then I was like, yeah, that is very far-fetched or something like that.
Yeah.
But just listening, food is always great, dropping off food.
Dropping off food.
Yeah, because you don't want to, like, this is just not just postpartum depression, but any depression, like, you can't get up, you can't get out of bed, you feel useless and hopeless and being able to just, like, put a lasagna in the oven and eat it is not only physically and mentally good for that person, but yeah, it's so helpful.
Yeah, perfect. I'm taking this all in now.
Yeah, right down.
me and Jordan are looking to have kids in the next couple of years. So,
yeah.
This has really opened my eyes up to something that I think needs to be talking about a bit more.
Yeah. And a lot of people you'll find once you start talking about it, everyone's like, can relate. And they're like, yeah, that happened to me. Or, you know, my mom had to come stay with me for 3 months. And it just, yeah, the conversations need to happen because it's really common.
Yeah. And how did that help with your mom staying with you for 3 months?
Oh, it was so helpful. Like, she didn't stay for 3 months, but so she would work like Tuesday, Thursday at my house until Drew got home. Mm. And then Drew would work like Monday, Friday, and then his mum would come over. She's retired and she would stay for like all of Wednesday.
Yeah.
And then in between then, like my friends would come.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, randomly. So honestly, I feel like I could never thank them enough for it. Yeah. Like, it makes me emotional because I still feel like I didn't deserve it in a way. Yeah. But, yeah, I'm so grateful for them all.
I've got some of your friends here.
Oh, great. Which ones?
Which ones do you think?
Are they females?
They're females.
Okay, that makes me feel better.
Is it Majul?
Yeah.
Majul.
Okay.
So I don't know if you're aware of the closing tradition of the podcast where we get a loved one, a family member, a close friend. They send in questions for the guests.
I did think you were going to ask Drew, and I was like, what the hell would he ask me? He literally knows everything.
That's what he told me. He's like, I got nothing.
Yeah.
So Majul asked you, if you could go back in time and speak to yourself right before you had kids, what would you tell her?
I did so well not getting emotional until now. I would say...
You can get emotional.
That I feel like you're going to be okay. Like, it was a hard time for a little while and I didn't know how I was going to be at the end of it. So I feel like that you're going to be okay. Your kids are amazing and it'll all be worth it.
It'll be worth it.
Yeah.
Love that. Alex?
Yep. She was my mother's group bestie.
Is she?
Yeah.
She wonders if your friends or support network could have done anything differently.
She's asking that for herself too, I guess.
Yeah, I think so.
No, she was perfect. She was exactly what I needed. She was calm, listened, was there for me whenever I asked, and she also knew when to like leave me and let me kind of work it out on my own.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
No, I think...
she had a good feel.
She had a good feel. She knows me really well. Mm. We're very similar, so no. I feel like everyone was amazing.
Yeah. One more.
Okay.
Briellen?
Yep.
Briellen? She's got two things.
I'm so nervous with these questions.
She's got two things for you.
Okay.
She wanted to know, how has your parenting changed knowing that taking care of your mental health is super important for both Georgie and Albie as they grow up?
So we talk about this all the time. Our parents' generation parented differently to the way that I think our generation is trying to parent. And I feel like we're very much focusing on letting our kids feel like if they want to cry, we're not telling them to not cry because it's okay to cry. And then afterwards we're discussing why they're crying. And I feel like sometimes we didn't get to do that as kids. Like we were very much like, stop crying. Let's move on and let's do this. And so I feel like my mental health, like I really struggled to feel my emotions and feel anything really. So I want my kids to know the feelings as they grow up. So like we have like books, like teaching them like this is happy. This is what it makes you feel like. Or yeah, so it's changed dramatically, I think, because I just want them to be so much more emotionally intelligent than anything else, because I think that's what gets you through life, you know? Like if you're aware of your feelings, your emotions, and you're aware of mental health and what it can do and the way you can get out of it, then your kid's set up, I think.
I love that. And it's also helps them to regulate their emotions too when they know what the emotion is in the first place.
Yeah.
And what they need to do to help themselves.
Yeah. And it's okay to feel that. Like even anger, like you're allowed to feel angry. I don't know who told us that we couldn't be angry or we couldn't cry. Like at what point did that happen? Mm. But it's allowed. You're allowed to just work on ways to deal with it. So yeah, that changed it.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
One more from her. She just wanted to say something to you.
Oh no.
She just wants you to know how incredibly proud she is of you. And that you have handled your ADHD with such grace. Even though the last couple of years have been tough, she has continued to be such a supportive friend and mother. I love you so much.
Love you too.
I'll let her know that.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for coming on today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, you've really opened my eyes up to something that I think is, needs to talk more about. So thanks very much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Cheers.